Hello, Rebels. I'm Sheila Gunn-Reed, and you're listening to a free audio-only recording of my weekly Wednesday night show, The Gun Show. Tonight, my guest is Marty Gold from thej.ca. Now, if you like listening to the show, then you will love watching it, but in order to watch, you need to be a subscriber to premium content. That's what we call our long-form TV-style shows here on The Rebel. Subscribers get access to my show, as well as other great TV-style shows, too, like Ezra's Nightly, Ezra Levant Show, and David Menzies' fun Friday night show, Rebel Roundup. It's only $8 a month to subscribe, or you can subscribe annually and get 2 months free. And just for our podcast listeners, you can save an extra 10% on a new premium membership by using the coupon code PODCAST when you subscribe. Just go to premium.rebelnews.com to become a member. And please leave a 5-star review on this podcast and subscribe in iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. Those reviews are a great way to support Rebel News without ever having to spend a dime. And now please enjoy this free audio-only version of my show. A Winnipeg man commandeers a fire truck and takes it on a very dangerous joyride. It should be national news, however, hardly anyone is even talking about it. I'm Sheila Gunn-Reed, and you're watching The Gun Show. Winnipeg man affiliated with the African Mafia street gang stole a fire truck that was attending a call and took it on a quote-unquote joyride through the streets of the city. He was out on bail for other charges. Now, this could just be a recidivist intoxicated yahoo, as the charges suggest, but many questions still remain. Then, is anti-Semitism on the rise in Eastern universities? Boy, sure looks that way. We're going to get into it because we have a really full show tonight with Winnipeg-based independent journalist Marty Gold from thej.ca in an interview we recorded yesterday afternoon. Now from his home in Winnipeg is my friend Marty Gold from thej.ca. Marty, I guess let's get it out of the way. Let's talk about the Grey Cup because you're in Winnipeg.
Well, you know, once every 29 years or so, like clockwork, the football team manages to cobble together a championship. This one was very similar in my mind to the victory in 1990, and that the team, I don't want to say had quarterback woes, but it's not like they had an all-Canadian quarterback. It's not like they were being led like by a Doug Flutie or a Tracy Hamm or something like that. In 1990, the Bombers, actually in 88, they won with Sean Salisbury, which was another miracle. And in 1990, they won with Tom Burgess, who is a fairly average kind of quarterback, but surrounded by a good cast and a strong defense. And there's a lot of similarities between the 1990 victory and this one. The city of Winnipeg, of course, rejoiced. They've suffered immensely. Earlier in the year, the team started to collapse, and there's a lot of people jumping off the bandwagon and calling that, never mind for the head coach's head, for O'Shea's head, but they weren't too happy with the offensive or defense coordinators either. And somehow, miraculously, I guess the rest of the league kind of didn't catch on what was going on in Winnipeg, and they tightened things up, and it was a very impressive victory. It was good for the spirit of the city itself. There's a local blogger, I know you don't hear that term too often anymore,
No.
Who did a statistical analysis and found that there's basically no Grey Cup attendance bump the year after a championship.
Oh.
Like, to the tune of, there's one outlier season, I don't remember which team it was. It might have been connected to moving into a new stadium or something the next season also. You take out that one outlier year, and in 20 years, the average attendance bump has been only about 350 people. I think that's probably season's tickets I'm thinking of. So that is interesting.
Yeah.
But the city definitely loves every quarterback it has, whether it's Nichols or Streveler or Zach Collaros, and they're back in love with Coach O'Shea. I think there's this puts a little bit of pressure, I think, on the Jets to not underachieve this year. And just like the Bombers with its defense, with Hellebuck and goal, the Jets' strength has not so much been the defense, though the defensemen have been hard-pressed and, without Bufflin, a lot of turnover on defense. But they've got a goalie who's having a career year. So Winnipeg sports fans are kind of, the enthusiasm's there. There was an event I was on, a wrestling event I was on and in, to my eventual demise, last Friday night. And that was a full house, too. And there was a lot of talk about Bombers. There's Bomber jerseys, Jets jerseys, as well as the wrestler's garb there. So Winnipeg's kind of revived a bit as a sports town, which is good to see considering the kind of debt the city of Winnipeg and the province are trying to navigate and negotiate. It keeps people's mind off the more serious things, which we aren't even going to delve into today. There's a lot of concern here with obviously still with downtown crime in particular, and a release of a report the province commissioned that includes using facial recognition now as one of the recommendations. There's something that just broke as we tape this. I'll send you some material.
Sure.
I don't know that Winnipeg wants to be renamed the New China.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm not so crazy about some of the ideas that have come up. But in the meantime, people have been not just celebrating, but I can tell you, far fewer drunken incidents than after the Grey Cup celebrations of certainly 1984 in the past. So people, I guess, are a little more mellow than they used to be when their team wins. Personally, I had no money on the game or anything, and yeah. I'm surprised they got through the playoffs the way they did.
Well, and that one guy gets to start wearing pants again, which is kind of exciting.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I made a remark that every story that every newsroom in Winnipeg, I'm not so worried about the ones outside of the city,
yeah,
but every newsroom ran every kind of story they could about no pants and his wife, which was sort of like a modern day Bickerson's.
Yeah.
And I realize that's a reference that's going to over people's heads. But every story that they ran about that was one less story about, never mind news issues. There's lots of sports stories in this town in terms of amateur sports, athletes, coaches, supportive parents, and enough about the guy in his no pants. Enough.
Now let's moving on from sports, because this is actually a news and politics show. Let's talk about the fire truck attack that happened in Winnipeg. It's not really national news, but
I don't understand
for some reason. I don't understand either. And you were digging down. The guy's got some priors. He's been in trouble before, and it sounds like he's out on bail.
That was actually, I took a look around, and we'll do this a little backwards in terms of how we approach it. The accused, I don't think of the right term here.
Yeah.
I went looking on the court records very briefly yesterday. This happened on Friday, and I was like, I had just gotten back to town from a 3-day trip out of town, wrestling in Souris and Brandon and Morden. Lovely towns all, by the way. And so while this was going on, I was trying to catch up on my own stuff and whatever. So I was basically only following it through Twitter. And lo and behold, one of the people that was an eyewitness at the very beginning, maybe 4 minutes after the fire truck was stolen at around the 1600 block of Henderson Highway, that's Councillor Bawadi's ward in North Kildonan, and Dave Minuke of Illegal Curve, the radio program on TSN 1290, Dave saw this fire truck ram a vehicle that pulled over to let it pass, got the sirens going and everything, and the fire truck just rammed the back of this guy's, I think it was a small truck, and sent him flying into a hydro pole, which knocked out power for like 800 people in the neighborhood around noon or 1 o'clock last Friday. So I did some looking around. I could only find one thing on the court records that are available online through the government of Manitoba of a garnishment when the accused, by I think it's pronounced BAI Karoma, was garnish sheet for a little over $1,000 when he was employed at Motor Coach Industries in 2014. That debt was satisfied. Global News today, having gone down to the courthouse, found out more about this fellow, that he was, in fact, out on bail when he stole the fire truck, allegedly stole the fire truck. I'm pretty sure he stole it when they had a tase him to get him out of the vehicle. Yeah. He was out on bail for domestic assault in October. He has a prior criminal conviction, and this was kind of bizarre. I don't have any recollection of this. In 2005, he was acquitted of robbery, but convicted of, assault with a weapon, and possession of stolen goods. So in 2005, this fellow got into some kind of deep trouble, seemingly wasn't in any trouble afterwards. Garnishment orders can happen. Who knows what that was over. That was actually, I think, a government garnishment, come to think of it. So it could be that there was a fine connected with the earlier conviction he hadn't paid. Anyways, this fellow, who originally is from, I think, Sierra Leone, hops in a fire truck that's attending a medical call.
I didn't realize it was attending a medical call. So it was actually in use. They were using it to save lives.
Well, you see, now this is another reason why it should be a national story.
Yeah.
This isn't where it was like parked on a, you know, at the fire station out on the lot while they're jockeying trucks around. The crew, nobody stays with the truck. The crew all goes in, and there's three high-rise buildings that are, you know, mostly senior citizens in that area of Henderson Highway. And he hops on the in the fire truck, careens up Henderson Highway, which is the main drag on the east side of the main north-south drag, like to go towards or out of downtown, ends up downtown, tries, you know, I want to be careful here. I don't know that he tried to run people over, but he certainly aimed at people and made them scatter in Central Park. He's driving through the downtown area, running red lights, being chased by 10 police cars. Now, this drive-through in Central Park is also significant because Central Park is largely, the area now is largely immigrants, especially African immigrants in that area, refugees, mm-hmm. immigrants, and certainly up, this is on the north side of Portage Avenue, about, say, six blocks from the legislature. And so you'll have a fair contingent of people that are from First Nations descent in that area as well. So, you know, you'd think that the national media would take a look at this, because it's one thing to go up and down, go the wrong way on Gary Street and, you know, joyriding. But riding up into a park and making people scatter when I can guarantee you the majority of the people that were in the park at the time were not businessmen and their secretaries out at lunch or something. Yeah. This is, to me, it was very disturbing. We'll circle back to that. He continued from his Central Park excursion, continued up towards the area of the legislature. He actually ended up behind Portage Place, the mall, which is near basically adjacent to Central Park, took out some of the bollards, ended up going southbound, I assume up Carlton, and then would have made what was actually a turn that a normal vehicle can't make to go down Assiniboine. And the cops laid down some spike belts, took out enough tires to stop the vehicle under the Midtown Bridge, which has a low clearance to begin with, tying up that route in and out of downtown adjacent to the river, until sometime Friday night. Among the charges, we'll go through the litany of charges: theft of a motor vehicle, dangerous operation of a conveyance. He was found to be impaired, but the police would not indicate if it was alcohol or drugs. Possession of a weapon. They haven't defined what that weapon is or stated what that weapon is. Flight when pursued, failed to stop at an accident times two, drive without a valid license. He did all this while out on bail for allegations of a domestic assault. Has the prior of an assault, which kind of makes me wonder if he's got a prior conviction for an assault. How with the subsequent domestic assault, he was out on bail. But again, I don't know exactly what the policies are of the Crown this year compared to other years. And this, of course, led to all sorts of questions among the general population, which have not been echoed in the mainstream media whatsoever. I mean, people were asking if he had priors. It took till yesterday to get down to the court to check it out. That I can understand. Was he on a watch list? Was he known to police in the last few years outside of this domestic matter? When he came to this country, how was he integrated? What do we know about his experiences, his schooling? Did he have contact at any point with mental health authorities? And those are all valid questions.
Yeah, I have a question too. I mean, if he is not a citizen yet, and yet he has these prior charges and a prior conviction, why is he still in the country?
I don't think that the citizenship question has actually been addressed, although the Winnipeg media, perhaps being not quite as woke perhaps as other media, it did actually publicize his name, which makes him identifiably African.
Yeah.
Nobody has raised the question that I've seen about whether he's has citizenship, or if he's a landed immigrant, or what his status is. What you've mentioned is a good point. If it turns out that he is here at the leisure of the Crown, I guess is how it's put. But in light of the timing of this, around the same time as the London Bridge attack, there's the guy in Sweden who had just gotten out of jail after serving 5 years for shooting somebody in the head, who rigs a vehicle to drive through a gymnasium wall in Sweden where they were playing, like, they weren't playing volleyball. Like, I think they're playing handball or something. So there's people inside there. And that video from inside the gymnasium is absolutely startling and could have been much worse. And that fellow leaves behind a letter that mentions Osama bin Laden or whatever. He gets released after 8 hours. So Sweden's a lost cause.
Yeah.
But with incidents in Sweden, that although the mainstream media don't talk about it, there are definitely people out here in the rest of the world that know that there's bombings every day, 21 rapes a day, all this violence in Sweden, and people look at this incident.
You don't have to go that far to Sweden. We just had a guy convicted in Edmonton of an attack with a truck outside of an Edmonton Eskimos football game. And he was charged with a litany of offenses, including 5 counts of attempted murder. He had an ISIS flag in the truck with him. And like this guy, I mean, just the fact that there's no terrorism-related charges doesn't mean that there are no terrorism-related things happening here, because the guy in Edmonton had an ISIS flag with him, and he still wasn't charged with terrorism-related charges. It was just 5 counts of murder.
I have to tell you that I look at this case here in Winnipeg, that driving into Central Park and making people scatter, that is, in my opinion, thank God I'm not a Crown attorney.
Yeah.
I don't see how that is an attempted vehicular manslaughter.
Yeah.
The guy does not have any qualification. Never mind he doesn't have a driver's license. That's an administrative technicality, perhaps. He doesn't know how to drive a damn fire truck. Now, the strangest thing is, here's, you got a guy who doesn't know how to drive a fire truck, driving it at people, going the wrong way on streets, no charges are related to the actual mayhem that he caused human beings.
Yeah.
It was a headline, and I sent you this yesterday.
Yeah.
There was a headline put up by CTV that has still not been removed, which has a quote in the headline: "I always wanted to do this. Man charged after high speed chase and stolen fire truck." That quote is nowhere in the story. And I thought I had misremembered it when this was being discussed on like Saturday with some people. And a girlfriend of mine like pulled it right. She said, "Oh, I saw that." And she pulled it right up on her phone and took a screenshot and sent it to me. And then my publisher, Ron East, I mentioned that to him. He said, "No, that's exactly what he said." He went and he checked the story. And there was no indication there had been an edit on the story by CTV. So there's a quote in the headline: "I always wanted to do this." No attribution for where it was said, when it was said, who heard it. Totally weird. but it's on the public record, so to speak. So again, to bring back my point about Mr. Caroma, if you've always wanted to do that, always wanting to drive a fire truck, okay, that's one thing. Always wanted to drive it for about however long that would be, I'm guessing like 12 kilometers up Henderson Highway, the wrong way down streets, landing under the Midtown Bridge, aiming at people one way or the other. If you've always wanted to do that, I'll put it this way. If you are a citizen, you need a lot of mental health assistance. Yeah. And if you aren't a citizen, bye-bye.
Yeah, good riddance. Let's move on to
want to go back for 1 second, though, if it's okay with you.
Yeah, of course.
Why do you think this hasn't been national news?
For the same reason the guy in Edmonton wasn't charged with terrorism-related charges. I think there's a lot of pressure in Canada to make it seem like we are completely immune to these problems, even as these sorts of problems are happening all around us. We can't have terrorism. Don't you know that everybody's welcome to Canada? And that's a perfectly fine thing to say. And it's perfectly fine to have open borders and not vet anybody. Let everybody come into the country without making sure that they are going to integrate and be perfectly safe for the rest of us. There can be no consequences to those sorts of policies, because that would hurt our beloved Justin Trudeau. So I think there's a whole narrative out there that this can't be happening. It can't be talked about. It's all mental illness. And so we just don't even consider that there could be something more sinister at play.
Well, I don't think there's a cone of silence yet. I don't know that there should have been or would have been an opportunity to reveal to report on anything that might have been found in his notebooks at home or this or that, as is in other we find in other cases and other jurisdictions. But it will be interesting to see what does or doesn't come out.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem if this guy's, you know, I do have a problem, because even if he's a citizen, this bailed on a domestic with a previous assault, you know, I'd be interested what kind of evaluations have been done about how safe or not safe of a character he is. It's really weird that I haven't seen any stories, as in people chattering online about this guy, that, you know, somebody knows him from where he works. I haven't found any of that yet. So it could be it's just a lone wolf. Yeah. You know, quiet, keeps to himself character. Not even a statement, though, from the African Association, any of those agencies, no statements from them at all.
Yeah.
Which I also find it would be nice if they had spoken out something, even to say that he was known in the community and people tried to help him in the past. Like, it's like nobody's thrown the guy a life preserver, let alone try to push him under the fire truck yet. It's being handled a very strange way. One thing the police will not discuss, or the fire paramedic service, is why the theft prevention device in the fire truck doesn't work. And the head of the union said that, it was there, but it doesn't work. It didn't work. And a lot of them don't work. And we can't very well put a club on the vehicles because that'd be ready to go instantly, which is, of course, a nonsense excuse.
Yeah.
The amount of time it takes to unlock a club, I don't think that's going to make a big difference.
Yeah.
But the notion that a Winnipeg fire truck can be stolen that easily by some jerk.
And then used as a weapon.
Yep. It's, you know who else has been silent about this? Our esteemed Mayor Bowman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a piece. I don't think anybody from council's said anything about it, actually. Kind of. It makes you wonder. It makes you wonder what they're going to say if other stuff comes up that makes this more along the lines of what you discussed happened in Edmonton.
Well, and that's the thing. The information is clearly out there somewhere. Nobody's really asking. And people want to know, is this guy just bonkers? And if he's just bonkers, why is he out on bail? Because that seems somewhat dangerous, as as evidenced in his little joyride. And if there's something more sinister, or why aren't we even asking if there's something more sinister? Because if there is, I think we all deserve to know. And the questions just aren't being asked.
Look, you know, in the old days in Winnipeg, bringing this back to locally, how it's, you know, there was like nothing on the newscasts yesterday about this at all, which I just thought there'd be some kind of follow-up. And there was not, like, nothing. which is weird because normally, you know what, there's one story how I think the guy whose truck got rammed into the hydro pole. I think I saw Kyle something or other. I think I saw something with him. But not the kind of usual follow-up I would have expected for a story of this magnitude. The fact it's not being paid attention to nationally, it's unusual enough that it should be, and that's before we get into the other factors. The notion that that we can't discuss the possibilities, the Canadians are too polite to bring this up, this actually leads into the next topic we're going to discuss, which is the acceptance of all peoples as being evidenced on college campuses in Eastern Canada.
Yeah. Joe Warmington has a great article, as always, in the Toronto Sun. He's one of the best in the biz, one of the greatest shoe leather journalists in all of Canadian history. He's got a great article about York University. They sanctioned a November 20th event that had four former Israeli Defense Forces reservists invited to speak about their experiences by Heyrut, Canada. And of course, the BDS folks came out and the Students Against Israeli Apartheid. There's no such thing as Israeli apartheid. I mean, it's just crazy. I've seen the reservists. I've talked to members of the IDF. Actually, when I was in Israel, I was shocked that the whole country is literally defended by millennials and Generation Z. And you walk away with this sense that our young people are not doing enough with their lives. That, you know, these kids in Israel, I mean, and they're literally.
Growing up very Jewish.
Yeah.
And going to Jewish elementary school, Jewish high school, and our teachers were Israeli. Yeah. So every teacher that we had served in the IDF in one form or another, whether they were paratroopers and some of them couldn't or wouldn't discuss what they did. And that's the female teachers, too. And there were people that, not so much in my grade, but in the older grades, where they would go in grade 10 and they would go live on a kibbutz, an exchange program for a year. Yeah. And there's some that would go and serve in the IDF.
Yeah.
Netanyahu is an example. He was born in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Right? And went to serve. My dad's oldest brother, Uncle Meir, he made Aliyah, moved to Israel, and the most, there was a picture of him on my grandparents' wall wearing his, and again, I don't know if he was a paratrooper exactly or what his service was, but wearing his service beret and looking like full Israeli. This to us was a normal expectation for the young men and women to be willing to risk their lives for the survival of our people and the state of Israel.
Yep.
And I agree with you. It is remarkable that with the generational changes that we've seen in the Western world, that in Israel, knowing that they could be murdered for no reason whatsoever at any moment, that dedication to state and to country and to our people, as well as to all, when you're in the IDF, you're defending the Druze, the Druzim, you're defending the Arab Israelis, the Aravim, you're defending everybody within your borders, and especially all the various Christian sects in Israel. And when you're right, when you compare it to what Western society's youth, what their expectations are, what their level of what they consider a level of achievement, they are very, 99% of them are very clued out about what sacrifice means, about what dedication really means. In this case, these reservists were brought over by Heyrut, and once the event was announced, Heyrut Canada having status as a group, a student group, on the York University campus, immediately the Friends of Israel started to band together, claiming that having soldiers here was a violation of this and that. And
everybody's a soldier in Israel. Everybody. Yep. So to have them here just means you had Israelis here.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
One of these organizations, I got to find the name of it. CourageCoalition.ca, whoever they are, that put out a press release about these IDF soldiers coming in as a thinly veiled attempt at recruiting volunteers to the Israeli military, and that's illegal in Canada. Well, actually, it's not illegal to recruit Israeli citizens or mm-hmm. citizens of your own country. You know, Switzerland could go and recruit people on campuses here. It was not a recruitment drive whatsoever. It's talking in very human terms, these soldiers, yeah. about their experiences in not just dealing with the lively kind of dangerous situations that will emerge on a day-to-day basis, but managing the tensions, dealing with communities that are taught to hate Jews, never mind distrust, but to outright hate and want to murder them. I don't know that you really have very many similar examples like that. And it's clearly meant to build bridges among humanity. It's not, they aren't there declaring Israeli sovereignty over the Negev or over the Gaza Strip or anything like that.
Yeah.
And instead, it's immediately determined by these kinds of radicals that if they're in the IDF, if they're loyal to the state of Israel, therefore they must be representatives of the political machinery. And they then describe what went on at York as a peaceful but energetic counter-protest organized by York students.
I love how these NDP far left-wing protests are always peaceful.
But the funny thing is that this one wasn't even, how should I put this? That the NDP, by not coming out, Andrea Horvath and Jagmeet Singh, by not making statements decrying this appearance and of these Israeli soldiers, the NDP stayed silent, and so the far left turned on the NDP.
Couldn't happen to a nicer bunch, I guess. I mean,
but the NDP wasn't radical enough, the NDP establishment, said anything about this. Now, how peaceful was this? What happened was there was a gathering through the hallways going towards the hall, Vary Hall, where the speech was taking place. Now, Warmington's column quoted Gila Yafet, who's a student there. She was going up the stairs, and she heard, "Go back to the ovens, bring back the intifada, kill the Jews." Now, let's pick this apart. "Go back to the ovens" is not an anti-Israel political statement. It is an anti-Semitic statement.
Yep.
That is the epitome of Jew hate.
That's genocide. I'm
"Bring back the intifada," which was organized terrorism targeting not military objectives, but civilian objectives, blowing up pizza places, blowing up kids as they're standing on a rechov on a street in Israel.
Kidnappings.
And generally targeting identifiable Jews, you know, Jewish males wearing a kippah or whatever.
Yep.
I don't see where that's a very peaceful statement. "Kill the Jews." Well, again, what do they say? "Peaceful but energetic counter-protest."
Yep.
Those aren't words of peace, to say the least. Leora David was quoted in Wormington's column. She heard the same thing, "Go back to the ovens." One person started saying it. Now, there was also, you know, at the root of this is that this was organized by Heroot Canada. And Lauren Isaacs is a friend of the J.ca. We brought her here to Winnipeg, where one way or the other, somebody tried to get the event canceled, no matter what is said mm-hmm. by so-called officials. Lauren is a brilliant speaker, 23 years old, part-time student, that has taken Heroot Canada on her back. And with her eloquence, with her determination, with her presence, has pushed back against these largely Muslim, but radicalized anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, pro-intifada groups on not just York University, elsewhere. In October, she set up an information booth. She was spit on twice. These people were screaming, forming lines in front of the table, screaming. And all she did was put up a sign saying, "I'm a proud Zionist, ask me why." And she was attacked in October about this, about doing this. these largely, she characterized them as largely Palestinian protesters that came out, and they were itching for another crack at Lauren. It's plainly obvious that her not being meek, her standing up for the historic rights of Jews in their homeland, that this upsets the apple cart of the anti-Semites who continue to propagate this falsehood that Jews are colonizers in Israel. So, for instance, when a housing development is started in Hebron, that this is somehow colonialism, even though Ronnie's own family, the Hamizrahi family, were purged from Hebron in 1929. As part of the pogroms. Now, after this, so October with the Beirut event, which had a lot of heat, no punches thrown, morphed into what took place at York, where Jews were trying to get through to see the event, and probably a few people who weren't Jewish, and where they're greeted by these kinds of chants and the pushing and the shoving both ways. And after the event, the Jewish establishment, which would be the Canada-Israel Jewish Affairs Committee, CIJA, otherwise known as the Federation, in Toronto would be the UJA. CIJA's a little, there's a slight delineation, but not much, largely the same characters. These are big macher groups. They all start making statements. We decry the violence and the hatred, and students should feel safe.
Okay.
Except they had nothing to do with the event, and in fact didn't do anything to support it or help it. And then Hillel Ontario opened their yaps about how concerned they were and how they had worked to secure. They were there last night securing the safety of students. And Gidi Maman, who I'd not heard of before.
Oh, he's good. He's great.
Very good.
Yeah.
And I was unaware of him. I think he's connected now in with Ron. He outright called on Facebook, outright called Hillel York a bunch of liars. The quote was, "We're thankful York's administration campus security worked with us to ensure the safety of our students in our space." He figures that they may have made a few phone calls before the event about it coming up. But Hillel, and I'm not sure, but I think there might have been another Jewish group, but Hillel Ontario told students that they did not endorse the event. They considered it dangerous. They would create a dangerous atmosphere. And advise students not to attend. Now, that's a hell of a way to stand up for Israel. That's a great way for Hillel Ontario or any Jewish group to stand up for the people who serve and risk their lives to defend the Jewish state. To tell people, don't go see them. Don't go support the event. It's too dangerous. Somebody might get hurt on a college campus in Toronto. Not a campus in Beirut, not a campus in Damascus, not a campus in Cairo, a campus in Toronto.
Yeah.
So he called Hillel Ontario out and said that Lauren and himself met with the police at 31 Division and met with security to work out the details and that they had the assistance of the Jewish Defense League. And it turns out there's two Jewish biker groups in Toronto. I didn't even know they were.
Who knew?
There was. Who knew?
Sons of the
one. And so when the pushing and shoving started, I'm sure that the anti-Semites in the crowd, I'm sure they were surprised instead of dealing with, the what you typically think of as the skinny yeshiva boys, the meek. They're dealing with some bulls, and they weren't used to that. And the bulls pushed back. I'm not positive whether charges have or haven't been laid because there was some altercations. I know one guy ended up in the hospital. I've seen pictures of that. One guy did get rocked. That should not be happening from either side, by the way. But the fact is that without those bulls there, without those Jewish men there who've thrown punches in their lives, who are willing to stand up, this could have turned very nasty against the Jews, against the Israelis that were there. Hillel had nothing to do with the event and the security plan, and Lauren herself had a comment. They did a lot to sabotage my event. They were unsuccessful. They attempted to take credit for the event themselves and publicly made false statements. They failed me and other Jews and Zionists on campus. They deserve to be called out for their divisive, disingenuous, apologetic, and lying behavior. Now, this has actually mobilized the Jewish community because they saw that CEJA, that normally is, and Toronto, the UJA, has taken community security back in-house. Winnipeg, for instance, they'd rely on the local CEJA. Montreal, I think, would be the same. They did, I'm watching my language here. They did bupkis, absolutely nothing. But the community has been very motivated by seeing this violence, by seeing this outcry, by hearing these chants. And the other group that needs to be complimented is the Friends of Simon Wiesenthal Center. So one woman posted on Facebook that she had called the hate crime unit to report these statements, Viva, Viva, Intifada, etc. She wanted to come to the police department and sworn affidavit and was told she was calling the wrong number. Now, she calls the number that she thinks is the hate crime unit. She asks, well, what number is this? They wouldn't answer. They said, well, it shouldn't be on Google. She checks with Google. It's a Toronto Police Intelligence Unit. She had already written York University and the president, Dr. Lenton. She had forwarded, this person had forwarded the letter she sent President Lenton to the police chief of Toronto, Mark Saunders, who emailed back that it'll be forwarded, her complaint will be forwarded to a special investigation unit, which she figures is the police intelligence unit. So the Toronto police are already taking it very seriously. They, not everybody involved in this was campus students. There was certainly the JDL, Jewish Bikers, so-called outsiders. But a lot of the people on the Palestinian side were also outsiders, many of whom are familiar to us. Rhonda Lenton has hired an outside investigator. Potential recommendations on how we handle external individuals or groups who come to campus with the intent of instigating conflict or mischief. A long letter, and it's a form letter. Lots of people in Toronto have gotten this. A difficult moment from our community. They want to encourage open, respectful, and free expression. Blah, blah, blah. You know what was missing from what Rhonda Lenton sent to everybody? The term anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to even mention that this is what went on. In response to this, the York Federation of Students, seeing that the administration wasn't going to be on their side, passed a motion they will actively oppose, quote, representatives of the Israeli state appearing on campus. But to make it seem like it's not just the Jews, they broadened their motion to any imperialist power invited to campus to gather support for war and occupation in Palestine and elsewhere. Wow. Are they going to protest if a speaker from China or Pakistan?
Yeah.
Throw a few countries in here, Sheila. Go ahead.
Iran. You know, I wonder if they've passed the same sort of motions to oppose representatives of the Iranian state. I bet no.
No, because the Iranian state is no doubt making sure that monies flow to these kinds of radicalized hate groups.
Yep.
You know, there was a post that was put, another post was put on Facebook, and it was by an American guy. I think it's more so about American campuses. But we now see that in Eastern Canada, this is a concern for Jewish families. Did you send your child to college to be attacked for being Jewish?
Yeah.
Did you send them to be brainwashed to hate Israel? To be bullied and intimidated by pro-Palestinian hate groups? To feel like a Jew in 1930s Germany and telling people to complain to these college administrators now and to be loud about it? And honestly, the Jewish establishment, whether it's in Toronto, we'll talk about McGill briefly.
Yep.
I'm sure something's going to happen in Winnipeg in the new year because it's time. You know, sooner or later, something's going to happen here as well. And I don't know, not that we have a Jewish biker group that I know of here, but I don't know how prepared the Israelis in Winnipeg will be willing to show up in numbers. But whether the Jewish community leadership is going to put out a call to the general community, to people like myself that are of Ashkenazi descent, for instance, to show up in numbers, to be prepared to push back.
Yeah.
I don't know if they've got balls enough to recognize that our people in this country are are facing outright hate. This isn't the odd wingnut spray painting a swastika on a sidewalk outside a synagogue. At McGill,
yep.
Jordan Wright is a second-year science student that is a representative on the legislative council. It was learned that she was going to go on a trip to Israel, a program called Face to Face, sponsored by Hillel Canada. And she proceeded to be targeted by the students' union there, interrogated about her personal life, harassed, told if she goes, she's going to be, if she should resign. If she doesn't resign, she's going to be impeached. There's a non-Jewish student, actually, I think, two, going on the same trip that have not been threatened with any consequences whatsoever. The way they play this game as well, you know, by going to Israel, you're making a political statement in our organization, your representation of students is supposed to be non-political. But there's a member of the executive with a pro-BDS sticker on her water bottle. But that's not considered political. And I feel really sorry for Jordan Wright, who I don't know from a hole in the ground, that a second-year university student, so she's, what do you figure, Sheila, 21 maybe?
Maybe.
Right?
Maybe.
21. And a science student. And here's a students' union that passed the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of anti-Semitism, which includes berating Jews for policies of the government of Israel.
Yeah.
And here they are doing the same thing that they recognize as anti-Semitism to one of their own legislative members. She wouldn't resign. And then I guess it was Monday this week, the university itself, university official, the deputy provost, Fabrice Lebeau, put out a statement that this motion, this attempt by the student union, contrary to the university's values of inclusion, that this is, and McGill has had, and York too, has had anti-Semitic incidents going back well over 10 years. This is this is an example of campuses that are hotbeds of radicalized leftism that finds allies anywhere they can on the political spectrum. As long as in the end, Jews are bad, Israel should be dismantled, colonialism, capitalism, all the usual things.
Yeah.
For a science student to want to take a trip to Israel and then to be bullied in this manner in Quebec, mind you,
yeah,
where you'd think that a Quebec government official, or God forbid somebody from the federal government, what with its seat of power coming largely out of Montreal and Toronto. I have not seen, have you?
No.
One comment from one member of parliament.
No.
Liberal or conservative. Now, maybe somebody did, but I haven't seen it. Certainly not from a liberal member because it would have been brought to my attention. None of them. They all run in cowardice. If it's going to take some Jew, Israeli student or organization worker getting the beat down and being put in an ICU before one of these political officials speaks up, it will be an indictment against our political leadership. This kind of hatred, these kinds of remarks, how do you have police officers at York University hear these calls go back in the ovens, mm-hmm. kill the Jews, and not immediately call for backups and start collaring the people? Oh, well, get a hold of us and we'll take your statement.
Yeah.
So Jews increasingly in North America, this is what young Jews are being subjected to. And they are not, I mean, Chayrut, certainly Lauren Isaacs tries to equip them with the arguments to counter these kinds of falsehoods that are raised about colonialism and occupy. Gaza's occupied? There hasn't been a Jew in Gaza since 2005, but Gaza's under occupation.
Didn't they take the bodies of Jewish people when they withdrew from Gaza? I think they did. They even took their dead when they left. They did. Well, of course.
So what we see happening in Canada, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, this at York University was like the day or 2 days after the Trudeau government reverse its field and voted with such staunch human rights natives that represent nationalities that represent human rights like Korea, like North Korea, in a motion condemning Israel.
Yeah.
Again, over the same usual colonial bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
So that from the Trudeau government, as he panders for a seat on the Security Council, this was a signal that emboldened these radicals, these Jew haters. And these are, don't you know, people out there that think I'm focusing too much on that. Believe me, they hate you too. They hate democracy. They hate Western Judeo-Christian values. They hate the traditions that form the foundation of our society. It was very convenient, finally, that Greta has gone and admitted that it's all about the patriarchy and colonialism, not actually saving the planet.
Yep.
And you out there that watch the rebel and consume other media, it's worth your while to pick up the phone, call your MP, whoever it may be.
Yep.
And even if they're one of these NDP, pro BDS, no good Nixon Montreal, and give them an earful.
Yep. Because, let them have it. Yeah.
Because you don't ever see Jews or Israelis in Canada. Now, I'm not saying everybody is pure of thought. That's obviously would be ridiculous. But there is no groundswell among the Zionist community. Kill all the Palestinians. Throw them off. Throw them out of their land. Yeah. Cut off their water. Poison their wells. There's no groundswell of hatred among Zionists towards any people in the Middle East. Although there's certainly a great deal of distrust for, you know, the agitators like, you know, Iran and Syria and like that. But in terms of the people in the Holy Land itself, this hatred, these threats are a one-way street.
Yeah.
And campuses are the battleground. We've seen it in the States. We've seen it in England. And Canada cannot afford to have generations of children, young adults, lost to this kind of rhetoric and this kind of internecine warfare when they're there to learn and to expand their minds. There's now a lot of talk about people withdrawing their donations to York University, as well they should. There are many facilities there named after Jewish philanthropists. And this, for the Toronto community, which is the biggest one, congregation of Jews in Canada, somewhere around 180 or 200,000, this might have served as a wake-up call, but not enough of them have thanked Lauren Isaacs for taking the initiative to do this, in my opinion.
You know what? It's a really great point that the young Israelis and the young Jewish people on Canada's campus, they cannot look to our politicians to save them because the politicians are not speaking out about this. They are going to have
cowards.
They're cowards, and these young people are going to have to save themselves. And it looks like with people like Lauren, they just might. Now, we have...
I just want to mention, of all things, Canadian parliamentarians, I'm going to suggest something I normally... Normally, I don't say do it the way they do it, you know, in European countries. Then you end up with bike lanes in stupid places. And I don't really think Europe should be copied in terms of lifestyle, a lot of things. The French parliament has decided that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism.
Yeah, and that's so Stephen Harper thought that France, too. Yeah,
if it's good enough for France, it's crawling with this kind of radical Muslim, the radical imams, and this attempt to destroy the way of life. We see it in France. We see it in Sweden. France recognizes that you can't separate the hatred for the Jewish people with the way that people want to dismantle the state of Israel. Canadian politicians, of all things, I'm saying, why don't you be a little more like France?
Yeah.
And open your mouths and stand up for Jews.
Yes.
Y'all, we're plenty good enough to get our votes. We're plenty good enough to get our political donations. We're plenty good enough to, like, you know, come to the Human Rights Museum that the Asper family quarterbacked. We're plenty good enough for that. But when our children, our grandchildren are being threatened on campuses and you stay silent, you can do a lot better, all of you.
On that note, let's move to something a little more fun. You have a story, It's funny because I probably do more stories about coyotes than anybody else in the media. Ironically enough. But you have a story that links, I guess, your family to a coyote that was hit on the road.
So I'm minding my own business, and all of a sudden my sister creates a Facebook group with me and her daughters. So we don't have a family gossip group or anything like that. Maybe, you know, if a Hanukkah party's coming up. So I knew something was up. My sister puts in a link to a story about a man hits coyote. As the story went, a man, the first story didn't identify who, a Winnipeg man, driving down the highway on his way to work and hit something, thought it was a dog, picked it up and put it in his vehicle. He's going to work for an 11 p.m. shift, 11 to 7, an overnight shift, puts in his vehicle and goes into work. And they start calling, you know, the RCMP or conservation officers. Nobody can come till the morning. He thought it was a husky or a big or some kind of big dog, and it turns out it was a coyote. And this was not just any Winnipeg man, it was my uncle, and he's only about 10 years older than me, so this is very much like my older brother, the way I was raised. He's only like I'm pretty sure he's only 10 years older than me, so I was like, I don't remember, but I was at his bar mitzvah. And here's my Uncle Ellie on the news. I'm sure it's the first time his name has been in a newspaper since like his birth announcement. He's a pious Jew. He was in his day a science nerd, went to U of W to take sciences. And I'm amazed, even without people knowing who he, you know, that knowing that he was my uncle, my dad's youngest brother, and still lives in my grandparents' house.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He never left the homestead, so to speak, half a block from where the synagogue was. I was amazed at the people I know that had such wonderful things to say about him without knowing it was my relative, without knowing it was something like an older brother to me, for saving this animal and for caring, because his rationale was that this animal injured on the highway, knocked out, was going to be attacked by predators. And that's why he saved Wile E. Coyote. And he went for a visit to the I don't remember what it was called exactly, the Wilderness Center, where it's been lodged for recovery. I want to give him a plug, Wildlife Haven Rehabilitation Center. And so Uncle Ellie went out there and looks through the window at it. And it was funny that there are a couple of people, you know, gradually yesterday it came out that you could tell from the last name, which is the real family last name. So everybody, we're all related. Anybody with that last name is related. He's really like the least famous of all of us. Never one that would be prone to public speaking or any misadventures like that. And would never appear at City Hall or anything, any of the work that I've done. But one thing that really cracked me up was a couple of people remarked on watching his interview. I think it was Samantha Sampson on CBC. That besides that, you could see a family resemblance in the face, but once he started talking and the use of language, and you could see that he was, you could see the two of us are related, just from the cadence, from the kinds of language that he used, the way he described the incident and the animal, showing off the damage, very minimal damage to the front end of the car, which really surprised me. I never thought I'd see the day where my religious uncle, who's like the vice president of a synagogue, would end up on every news channel. But if he was going to end up in the news, doing so by being a good Samaritan. I mean, what we call it, when you do something that's in this realm in the Jewish faith, it's a mitzvah. Yeah. And for him to get the kind of recognition that he's gotten, people that don't know my Uncle Ellie have no idea how many, never mind animals, he's helped, and to the point where it's a little ridiculous with cats and dogs, but how many people he's helped and never asked for credit, never taken credit for it. And really what my uncle reflects is the values taught to him by my grandparents, by his parents, by my Zeta and my Baba. It was really something to see people identify the similar characteristics through this incident that that runs in my family and that I try to reflect sometimes to my journalism in terms of the kinds of stories I cover and sticking up for people. I don't really do a lot of animal stories, honestly. But I guess I could just sort of leave that up to my uncle from now on to fill in the gap.
Yeah, I think he's got it covered. Marty, where can people find the work that you do, both your secular work and the work you do covering issues of the Jewish community? And more importantly, I guess, how can they support your work to keep you going?
The J.ca is one location. And I don't know for sure what we're going to have up when this airs, but Ron East, my publisher, is on the road, and he was itching to write a publisher's statement with regards to the incidents in York and McGill. And I think that we'll probably have something like that up. For me personally, the Great Canadian Talk Show, the acronym TGCTS.com. I've been a little out of the loop news-wise lately in terms of publishing stuff. I've been trying to get some private work off the table, but I am inclined to produce a story that asks the following question. The Manitoba government loves putting out press releases about fining this business and that business for industrial accidents. You know, yeah. A guy leaned in to pull something out of a machine, and his hand got sucked in, and they fined the company $40,000. And these kinds of, again, these are mostly industrial accidents, workplace safety accidents. The Board of Manitoba Liquor and Lotteries has known for over 2 years about this uptick in robberies. It culminated with a girl standing behind the counter while there was more than one guy. It wasn't a mobbing in terms of five guys, but there was a few there. I think this one involved three people standing behind the counter as she was instructed. The token security guard they have had been threatened. He ran into a locked room. She's standing behind the counter, not moving. I don't know if she was told to open the till or not. And this girl took a sucker punch right to the face. Not cool, taken to the hospital. I do not understand how liquor and lotteries officials, knowing that this danger was increasing week after week, month after month, with these mobbings, and these are people that are either, sometimes they're disguised, sometimes they aren't, I don't understand how they have not been charged under the Workplace Safety Act. And I don't accept the excuse that, well, they were appointed by the government. That makes them special. If the liquor stores here were private enterprise, I guarantee you the Palliser government would be putting out a press release about the fines and the sanctions that would be issued against private liquor stores in Alberta. They would go nuts on private enterprise, but there's been no consequences. And look, some of these people are nice people. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I'm pretty sure that the board, both of the there's liquor and lotteries, and then there's the bigger board that involves the cannabis too. Both boards have former conservative MLAs on them. Last time I looked, that I know, and that are reasonable people. That doesn't mean that the individuals on the board should not be held to account for not clamping down a lot sooner and not instituting better safety protocols. And instead, some girls got to, and I'll tell you who else has fallen down on the job, honestly, the MGU, the Government Employees Union, they're normally a lot more aggressive, and they can't make enough excuses for the government's failure to do something to stave off these wave of robberies that have endangered not only the staff but the customers as well. And for in that instance, the liquor mart was inside a mall, and so that endangers customers too. And people are concerned about identifying the perps and, oh, this is driven by poverty. No, it's driven by criminal behavior. And anybody who says, oh, people are stealing, you know, 60 pounders of vodka because they're poor. Well, maybe they're poor, too poor to buy a 60 pounder of vodka. But when they're stealing five or six of them, this isn't poverty. It's criminal behavior. And the lack of action by the employer to protect their employees adequately, in my opinion, should be subject to the same kinds of investigations and sanctions as if it was a smelter in Flin Flon. Well, so I think I'll probably be running something along those lines. Well, might even name all the board members, actually, because nobody talks about that. I might even run that, see if I can get a current list, put their names up. And then when people bump into them at the local liquor mart, they go, hey, how do you feel about that girl got punched in the face? What if that was your daughter? I was saying for a long time, Sheila, the board should go and pull shifts in these stores to see what it's like.
You know, that's a great point. Yeah. Name and shame these people. I mean, they're in charge. You know, that's who's the boss here. That's who's accountable. And like you said, if this were a private industry, there'd be all kinds of trouble, and you'd be hearing it from the government.
If a licensed premises, and they get their license from this same liquor board, if a licensed premises kept reporting, we're having booze stolen from behind the bar, people just walk by in the bar, stealing the bottles and walking out, they would have punched, from the bars I've worked in and managed, they would have punched our ticket, they would have closed us down.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
Period. End of story. The only people who can get away with having their liquor stolen is the goddamn government.
Marty, we're coming up on an hour here. I got to thank you for coming on the show. You're always so generous with your time. We love your passion for the Jewish people, for the news, but also for the little guy. And I feel like that's the perfect encapsulation of what Manitoba and specifically Winnipeg needs right now.
I appreciate your kind words, and I appreciate, you know, I hear from the audience on Twitter.
Yes.
People retweet the you know, clips that have been put up. All of it means a lot to me. I do my best in challenging circumstances in Winnipeg. There's not the kind of support you'd think for independent media voices here, because it's such, ultimately it's a small community. Everybody's like naming names. Media won't do it. I'm the kind of guy that does it. And one of the reasons that I do it is because I know that there's a strong contingent out there, not just in Winnipeg and Manitoba, but across the country, that wants to see things done right, that wants to see accountability and transparency, especially out of government, and that wants the certain kinds of truths, you know, not whispered, but told a little louder. And that's what I try to do. Hopefully I'll be on with you. If it's not before Hanukkah, it's after Hanukkah. I guess I'm going to have to try to dig up a menorah or something. Decorate the set a little differently, and I'll pull Jesse Ventura and Jimmy Hart and put a menorah up. And I appreciate you having me on and give me a chance to talk about what's going on here in the Keystone Province.
Yeah, you know, Manitoba matters. You know, there are things going on in Saskatchewan. There are things going on in Alberta. Toronto thinks you're the center of the universe. Sounds like... Montreal is a hotbed for anti-Semitism right now, but Winnipeg matters, and you shouldn't be treated like flyover country. So I'm happy to have you on and give you all the time you need.
Thanks so much.
You got it, Marty. We'll talk again. Imagine spending thousands of dollars every year to send your child to what you think is a good Canadian school so that they can get a high value education, only to have your child discriminated against and lose opportunities because they believe the state of Israel simply has the right to exist. That's the state of many Canadian campuses, and it is spreading. And it's time we all started paying attention to the problem. Well, everybody, that's the show for tonight. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll see everybody back here in the same time, in the same place next week. And as always, don't let the government tell you that you've had too much to think.